Morning. You would have heard me talking. So I'm astrophysicist from Monash University, and my interest is in habitability of places like Moon and Mars. And I'll be moderator with our lovely panel. So we will start with agent number 9, Annie from Australian Space Agency. Annie, would you like to say a few words about your background and what do you do?
So I'm Annie Daly. I'm perhaps the Chief Operating Officer for the Australian Space Agency. I was the 9th employee of the Australian Space Agency. It only started on the 1st of July this year. But I'm an engineer by background and a very long-serving government representative that knows government and working through government.
And our second panellist is Dr. Amanda Caples, and she also has a super cool name of Victoria Lead Scientist. So let's hear what that means.
Okay, thanks, Jasmina. So, yes, I'm the lead scientist in the Department of Jobs, Precincts and Regions, but I work across the Victorian government, and the way that I describe what it is that I do is that I just join the dots between different sectors, different parts, different departments, different elements within our ecosystem, universities, stakeholders, and around things that really matter, so opportunities and problems. And it's been my great pleasure to work on space and work with the Australian Space Agency.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Kerry Doherty. She wears many, many hats while trying to finish her PhD at the same time. She has written amazing book called Australian Space, which you can buy afterwards if you haven't bought it already. So, Kerry, tell us all about you.
I don't think there's anything left to say. Yeah, so my name is Kerry Doherty. I am here today representing the World Space Week Association, of which I am a board member and have been associated with for 30-odd years. But the rest of the time, I'm a freelance space historian, curator, writer, and lecturer for the International Space University and struggling PhD student.
And next speaker is Rosie Tasker. And I have to read this title. It's Tastronaut. Can you tell us what a Tastronaut is?
I respond to whatever. So Tasker is, I think, how we normally go. But yeah. So I'm a bit all over the place. I was actually a musician, and then I moved into anthropology and public health and environmental science research overseas. And then when I hit the space industry, I ended up doing anthropology-based research, space medicine. My research has spanned brains in space, fungi in space, indigenous astronomy, which is really awesome, and remote sensing. I also run a comedy show in Tassie, and I'm training to be a commercial astronaut, I've completed.
Just offside, kind of on the side thing.
Yeah, on the side.
Trying to be an astronaut.
Just on weekends, training to be a commercial astronaut, and I'm actually really excited. Sorry, because there's three Australian-based Australians that have done the scientist astronaut training in Florida with this program, and all three of them are in this room today, which is. I just realised that. That's awesome. Yeah.
Aussie rules.
You can have the panel back now.
No, that's okay.
Tell you something, Rose. The very first conference I went to, Space Engineering Conference in 1984, there were about 100 men and 3 women. So at least the numbers have improved a bit since then.
Just very quickly, I'm really interested in unusual pathways to the space industry. So I've been talking to people who didn't go do engineering or science at school and then get a grad position and go straight into a government position or an aerospace engineering job. So, for example, one of my colleagues, he's 45 years old. He was a DJ in a strip club for most of his life. And now, I'm not supposed to tell too much of his story until he's ready, but now he runs a space-focused organisation. He's getting his bachelor's degree. He didn't even have a GED. And the only thing he said to me, he was worried that there wasn't room for him in the space industry. So he made room. So it's worth it. The hard work is worth it. If you get stuck, there is always someone to help you. Just reach out. What I love about space is, this is a made-up number, but I'm sure it's close, is 98% of people who work in space do it because they love space. Like, what? How lucky are you to work in an industry like that? Just go for it.
Yes, passion. But I'm just going to piggyback on your issue of gender in STEM in general. And I come from Serbia originally, and I grew up in socialism, cooperative socialism, which was quite unique society where gender equality existed. And so when I came to Australia, and you know, there's no issues of girls in STEM or having role models or professors in STEM to be you know, enough men and women. And when I came to Australia as a PhD student, I was surrounded by women, so I haven't noticed it either until I went to US and realized how much it's structured there. And then, of course, I came back to Australia with kids, and then it became obvious. So this is the issue that we have girls interested in STEM careers. They do enter undergraduate and even postgraduate studies, but it's the cost of maternity break, because the career is always seen just as a linear. You're not allowed to take breaks or turns or, you know, things. But what's great is that, and of course you persist and you have support group, you know, you support people around you and your passion carries you through that. You focus on opportunities, not barriers. But what's happening now is that our male colleagues are going, well, I want to spend time with my children. Can I drop down to 4 days a week while my kids are little, because I want to spend time with them? So it's that what we needed, that reinforcement that we needed to change this culture. But also I want to mention that I'm also a member of National Space Society, and we have formed last year, after the Australian Space Research Conference, we have formed Women in Space Committee chapter, and we're going to be actively promoting careers for women in space. And as soon as we formed, the word went around, and various associations of women in aerospace industry and other contact leaders, and especially Careers in Space, which is a company, Australian company, but they actively promote careers, women applicants to the companies. So hopefully that will kickstart some of that retaining women in space industry as well. Okay, should we open? We can talk about this forever. Should we open the space now to the audience? Question there?
Hi, thanks for that. That was really interesting. I'm actually from Matters Journal, and a lot of what we are concerned with is storytelling and the importance of actually communicating to the public things that they didn't know before. And it was really interesting to know that not many people, perhaps in Australia, feel connected to space exploration because they're just not really aware of our involvement with it. So that was really interesting. My question was around the demographics in a space society or an interplanetary society. So say we do settle Mars, do you think there's a specific type of person who would actually have the capital and the skill set to be able to go to Mars in the first place? And how would that shape the society that we form there? Would it be more homogenous or maybe more egalitarian?
Would somebody like to answer that?
No. I'll have a go. I think it will very much depend on who it is that starts that settlement on Mars, whether it's a private company, whether it's a space agency, and if it's a space agency, you know, whether it's the Chinese Space Agency or the American Space Agency, because they're obviously going to have different approaches to what they see as the makeup of, you know, the astronauts they want and the roles they want them to fulfil. So I don't think you can give a single hard and fast answer, because it will really depend on how that actually progresses. You know, if it's a world cooperative effort, that's going to be different from if it's a single nation or single agency effort. Anybody else want to comment?
Yeah, I'm happy to say. So I think we've got plenty of time to think about it. Because when you do think about it, it's not until you do that you realise that in order to establish a society on Mars, where do you get the infrastructure? So there's going to have to be a fair amount of infrastructure that's needed to be built before that's going to be a reality. And sort of working back from that, you know, so there will be, and the only way that really makes sense to do that
is to utilise robots, which is why there's such an interest in robots, et cetera, et cetera. So, and of course, we've got human shielding, so or shield, radiation shielding, not only of the equipment, but also people in order to survive on there. So I think we've got time, and it's a really important question to ask, and that's why I think the institution of ethics and looking at the legal aspects of colonisation or even just exploration of outer space is so important, and it's something that I certainly, and I don't know, Annie, whether you're able to comment on, but NASA and other agencies are starting to lead that work, knowing that, and the good news is that they recognise it's something that they need to get ahead of and are starting to explore and engage with the public on these questions.
And what's interesting, I have an online course, open free course, MOOC, about how to survive on Mars, and it focuses on science behind it. It was made, we made it so that we inspire mostly high school students to stay with science and showing that science is about, we understand science challenges, but we need to develop technology. And it's interesting because it's through FutureLearn platform, which really focuses on learners learning from each other a lot. And we run it now 4 or 5 times. Every time learners bring up, because they research their own articles, we provide some and we ask them to search for some, and they find and conclude how to send women in space will be much more efficient. And a research paper just came recently, a month ago or so, again saying that women can actually bear these space travel much better than men. We can have doctors comment on that. But it sounds like a lot of data points to the fact that women will have to be a significant contribution. And NASA is definitely working on that. They promote, they have now their 8 female recruits, and they're definitely saying, 4 of these women will touch Mars at some point. China certainly has a lot of female astronauts, so I think it's becoming more... we don't want to see just men touching, leaving the steps on the moon and Mars. I think that we'll definitely see some female astronauts as well.
Thank you all for sharing your thoughts and insights. This is a fascinating session. My question perhaps goes to our luminary from the Australian Space Agency. Given your insight into the strategy of the agency and given the inspirational nature of human spaceflight, when do you think the first Australian astronaut will launch?
You mean Australian astronaut that didn't have to change citizenship?
Correct.
I would always like to say that our strategy is going to take into account the fact that the inspiration piece is always to have humans in space. And I don't think that the Australian Space Agency is not going to have that as an end goal in our strategy. So we're excited about it. It's definitely, I have to temper the enthusiasm of our politicians who love to say it quite quickly. But our strategy will work towards that. And that is something that it can't be done in 5 days. Like, it takes some time to do it. But we're not limiting our sights.
What I find quite interesting is that Australia was actually offered ESA associate membership, I think, 5 times, and they turned it down for various reasons, which would have made it easier in the long term if we wanted to send someone to space. But that said, you still have to fork up the money for it. So that's $75 million US at the moment just for the seat. That doesn't include your training. And so the government has to convince the public that that's a reasonable expense. And we're having enough trouble convincing the public that having any sort of space activity is a reasonable expense. So it's an awesome endeavour, and that would be really exciting, but it will be interesting to see how it goes, yeah.